I'm glad this moment has come so I can stop thinking about what I'm going to say and what needs to be said and whether or not, I can even say it. And we can just get to that task. I'm married, have been for 25 years. I have two beautiful daughters. I have one that is married and lives in North Carolina with her husband, who is a preacher. And I have a daughter who is finishing up her first year at Fried Hardeman University. As far as family goes, I have been a happy man with just that. But in 2009, my wife and I learned that we were going to have a son. That was one of those unexpecteds, but it was a blessing. I am the only remaining male Davis, aside from my father. If there are any more, they come through me and in my family line anyway. And so our son would have been the continuation of our family line as those things go by way of importance. To some. And our son, Jaden, was born January 8th, 2009. And he died February 7th, 2009. I have a photo album in my office that has somewhere near 30 pages in it. And in 30 pages, his life is captured. Tried to figure that up in my head, if we had a photo for every day of our lives, I think mine would be somewhere around 180,000 or something. I can't, maybe that's crazy, not even true, but it's a lot. It's a lot more than 30, not 180,000. Anyway, you get the point, I think. 30 pages of 30 days of a life that was more difficult than any of us can imagine. He went through more in 30 days than we will in a lifetime. That was my first brush with grief. When I came into this world, all but one of my grandparents had died. My only grandparent, my grandmother, just had her 101st birthday. So I have never, until that point, had any personal death in my lifetime. And so this was a first. And I say all that just hopefully to let you know today, if that's the situation that you are in, if you have struggled with grief, if you are right now dealing with the trauma of losing someone you love, or for any other reason. Grief can be caused by numerous reasons. I hope you understand I'm not someone from the outside trying to tell you what your life should be. I have, in my own way, been there. And it's messy. It's ugly, and it's very, very heavy. There are different phases. There are no stages to grief. You don't work your way through them in a cycle, one after another. There are different phases. There are phases like numbness, shock. How could this happened to me? You can imagine the shock I felt as a gospel preacher, one who is devoting his life to preaching the gospel, and yet the feeling that my prayers didn't help, a situation very close to me. There's denial, depression, loneliness, and even withdrawal for preachers. This assignment addresses the subject, ministering through grief. Now think about those words, ministering. Helping other people with their problems and helping them get along through life. But this is ministering through grief. How do you do that when you're one of the ones experiencing the very things that you're trying to help people with? And you're trying to figure it out yourself. A year before Jaden was born, I taught a grief class at the Atlanta Church of Christ in Atlanta, Texas. I didn't have a lot of experience, as I said, but academically, I was taking a book and walking the congregation through those things. One of the chapters in that book is entitled, Preacher, Take Away My Grief. And that's what people expect. Preacher, help me. But who helps the preacher? Who helps the one who ministers to those who are grieving when he's grieving? I didn't know at the time, but in a way I was preparing myself through that class for what I would be dealing with in just a few months. A year after Jaden died, I preached a sermon at Atlanta. As I was still working through these things, as I was talking to myself spiritually, entitled, How Faith Shapes Us in Grief. This is the outline of that lesson, though the points to it have changed somewhat in these years. The key for me is the word trust. And I'm not talking about faith in the cliche way people use faith. Just trust God. I thought about illustrating this. I wanted to get my good friend Tim to come up here and stand against this wall. And then I wanted to get the biggest pocket knife in the room, a big, nice Texas-sized pocket knife, and open it up and ask him if he trusts me, like they do at the circus, to throw the knife and stick it into the wall somewhere near you, but not in you. Would you trust me to do that? No. Trust. Trusting God in a situation that you don't know, you don't understand, you can't figure out on your own. For me, that has been the answer that has helped me so much. And by the way, when I say me, I mean my family, not just me. My wife is the strongest lady I know. She lost her husband, She lost her father not too long after we were married. She lost Jaden. She lost her mother. She lost her brother. She's lost a lot. So when I say I mean we. And my daughters who lost a brother. But trust. Trust is the key to making it through life when you have been faced with hardships that you don't know how you're going to deal with. Now let me try to fit that in and explain that in the little bit of time Garrett's going to give us today. First, trust that I'm not alone in my grief. It sure feels like it. It feels like a solo flight, like a rocket has been strapped to your back and you've been shot into oblivion and no one is around. No one knows you're there. You're all alone. It's kind of like my dear friend Janie Brandon said, a lady who worked for the Agape Adoption Agency in Memphis, was a great supporter of students at the Memphis School of Preaching and who became a second mom for me. She died while we were in preaching school. But she had lost her teenage son who was my age, his senior year of high school. He was involved in a car accident and died as a result of his injuries. I can't remember if it was a Friday night or a Saturday night, but it was late. She was at her home, family and friends around trying to comfort her. And she says, I just remember looking out the window and the sun was coming up. And she said, I was dumbfounded by that. Why is the sun coming up? How can the world keep going when mine has stopped dead in its tracks? And that's the sad reality of it. The world keeps turning. And people's lives continue, and that's no fault of their own. While yours seems to have stopped, everybody else keeps going, and it feels like you're all alone. I'm not trying to do any contextual damage to 1 Corinthians 10:13 today. I think what I'm about to say about this passage is a principle that it encompasses, that reaches into a lot of areas. But when Paul says, there's no temptation that's taken you but such as common to man, whether you believe that's the temptation to sin or whether you believe it's the trials of life, both are true. There's nothing that you will deal with while unique to you and your situation. In general, others have experienced that as well. The trials, the difficulties that we face in this life are common to people. I was at a time in my life where I had never experienced it, but then I did. It's common. We have a feeling of aloneness, but we need to know that we're not alone in our grief. There are others who are suffering and have suffered just the same. I was taught in preaching school that verse 12 means or carries the idea, let him that thinks he stands alone take heed lest he fall. And at least that principle is true here as well. There's a tendency to think we stand alone. But some of the greatest people I know have been right there as well. Job 3:3, may the day perish wherein I was born. 2 Samuel 12:16 of David. He pleaded with God for the child, and David fasted. He went in and lay all night on the ground. And his prayers, his petition to God. We do the same thing, right? Whether it's sitting beside a hospital bed with a loved one who is in a medically induced coma, and you're not sure what their condition is going to be, we stay there all night praying. Or as in my case, by the bed of a little boy who would never make it out of the hospital, with who knows how many machines connected to him pumping medicines in his body. having had open heart surgery, with his heart exposed, covered only by a mesh screen. It's devastating. And you pray and you pray and you pray all night. My caution to us is not to think we're alone, because there are people in the Bible who felt that way and experienced very similar things. Jesus. John 11, 33 through 35. In response to the weeping over Lazarus, the Bible says he groaned in his spirit. That was not affected. It was real. Jesus wept, but he groaned in his spirit over that situation. First, trust that you're not alone in your grief. Number two, trust that grieving is not a sign of faithlessness. In fact, it's normal. It's absolutely necessary. And it's therapeutic. And praise be to God today for giving us a mechanism by which we can deal with tragedy in life. I've thought a lot of things about Psalm 139, verse 14. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows right well. But I think of it about the way God has equipped us to deal with loss. That we don't take it all at once, and we don't have to process it all at once. We can do it in phases. If you had to take the full weight of grief all at once, it would destroy you. Our compulsion is to hold it in because we think it's a sign of weakness, especially preachers. I remember when Pam's dad died of a brain tumor. We were in Hampton, Virginia at the time. Glenn Hitchcock was the preacher for the church there where we had been converted. We were very new Christians at the time. And my wife was being very strong. And Glenn told her, he said, Pam, you need to grieve. He said, you'll do it now or you'll do it later. It will come out. Because it's natural and it's necessary and it's therapeutic for us. We are fearfully and wonderfully made by our God in that way. The great lie in ministry is that preachers have the unique ability to handle loss and grief differently than everybody else. And we need to quit telling ourselves that lie. We're just people. Loss is not easy. And it hurts everyone regardless of their degree of faith. But that is okay. It is okay to grieve. And it is not a sign of faithlessness. When you just sit down in the shower and just bawl. Or you sit in the car after getting home from somewhere and you just cry before going in. It's not a sign of weakness. It's natural. It's necessary. So trust that grieving is not a sign of faithlessness. Number three. Trust God as my or your constant as you work through grief. This is what I was telling myself a year later. Trust God as my constant as I work through my grief. It takes time to process these things. Author Vicki Harrison said, grief is like the ocean. It comes on waves ebbing and flowing. Sometimes the water is calm, and sometimes it is overwhelming. I would add, sometimes it's wave upon wave. But she says, all you can do is learn to swim. And it takes time to learn to swim. I remember my dad trying to teach me how to swim. I was in a lake. He was in the water and I was standing on the edge of a boat in water well above my head. And I was scared to death. But you just have to trust that He's going to take care of you. He's going to catch you. And we've probably all been in situations like that with mom or dad, husband and wife, people in whom we trusted that we could hold on to them and we could make it through those things. We need to hold on to God. You know, the slogan says, let go and let God. I don't believe that. Hold on and let God. You have to hold on. We sing, hold to God's unchanging hand. The passage has already been mentioned a couple of times today. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5, in particular, the latter part, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Do you believe that? James 1:17 says that with God there is no variableness, no shadow of turning. Not even an indication of turning. In Psalm 23 and verse 4, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you art with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Hold to God's unchanging hand. Trust God as you're constant as you work through grief. That's what Job did. That's what David did. That's what Paul did. By the way, at Southwest a few years ago, I preached a sermon on the loss of a child. And I took David's situation from the perspective of a grieving father. It's easy to look at the lies, the cover-ups, the adultery, the murder. It's easy to look at that, and we should, because every bit of it was wrong. But in the midst of all of that, he was a grieving father, too. And that was just as real as everything else. I would challenge you to look at that passage from that perspective as well. But think about Job, Job 13 and verse 15. Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. Or what about David, 2 Samuel 22, verse 31. He is a buckler to those who trust in him. One of my favorite passages, or a passage that has become one of my favorites in recent years in my life, has been Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2. John mentioned it just a moment ago in his lesson. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him. What joy? The cross? What joy? Jesus faced some circumstances that were very difficult, but he could see through them to the joy on the other side. The joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. These examples that I've given of people who have been in very similar places to us, in their own way, held to God's unchanging hand. They trusted God as their constant as they worked through those difficulties. And every one of them found their way home, so to speak. As they had their hand held upward to the one who doesn't move, who never turns, who will never leave us nor forsake us. And so I would say, trust God as your constant as you work through grief. Number four, trust God can eventually turn my hurt into help for others. Tragedies happen, and they're not God's fault. But God can still use it. Be careful what you do here, brothers and sisters. I searched for a reason why this happened. What did I do? What did I not do? What did I do wrong? What did I not do enough of that led to this situation ending the way I wanted it to? Be careful. Tragedies happen. And it's not God's doing. But He'll use it. He's done that in the past. Genesis chapter 50 and verse 20. Joseph, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And I think of Philippians chapter 1 and verse 12, where Paul says, I would have you know, brethren, that the things which have happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. Adversity can put us in a better situation as far as goes helping other people. That's an interesting word if you slow down as you say it. Adverse. Doesn't adversity do that? Doesn't it add verses to our life? I would say that adversity composes the life song that we sing to help other people. Verse by verse. And God will use it to help us and to help other people. The psalmist said in Psalm 119, verse 71, it is good for me that I have been afflicted. He says that I might learn your statutes, and I believe that to be true. But at least in principle, it's good when we are afflicted to be able to help others in their affliction. And that principle is clear in other places in the Bible. Romans 12:15. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Galatians 6:2. Our duty and responsibility to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Trust God can eventually turn my hurt into help for others. I don't know what this might do for you today. And in the short time after this tragedy in my life, when I said this to myself, I didn't know how that might be affected. But maybe the two opportunities in recent years that I've had to speak to these things has been an opportunity to help people. And maybe that's trust being realized that our hurt can help others. Number five. And finally, trust God to make it better one day, even if I don't know how or if I can't see how. That book that I was taking my home congregation through at the time, by Don and Ron Williams, Walking with Those Who Weep, the last chapter in it that I taught in October of 2018, just a few months before our time with Jaden, is entitled, Will I Make It Through the Night? I have. My family has. And you will too. If you trust God to make it better one day. I know now that God works beyond my understanding. I don't mean anything funny or miraculous about that. We look at miracles as though they're God's extraordinary power. That's just a sampling of what He can do. I mean, think about what He can do without a miracle in helping us survive tragedies in our lives. Ephesians 3:20 says, Now to Him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all we ask or think, according to the power that works in us. The Word of God is power. But I would suggest to us this afternoon that trust is a power that God can do wonders with. Think about a person who doesn't trust God. What can He do with them? Think about a person who does. What can He do with our lives if we trust Him? Trust Him enough to let Him work. Let God do His work in your life. Isaiah 64 and verse 4, or 8 rather, says, You are our Father. We are the clay. You are the potter. And all we are the work of your hand. Let Him work. Let Him mold you and shape you while you were broken. Proverbs 3 verses 5 through 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. Romans 8:28. Hold on. We know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. It does not say all things will work together for my good. At least from my perspective, they didn't. The key phrases in this verse are for good and according to His purpose. In my simple mind, I like to think of it like a train. The train is on a track. It's going to its place. If I'm on that train, I'm going where God's train is going. No matter what happens to me, I just need to stay on that train. That's His purpose. And when we do that, then I think we have an idea about what this verse is talking about. God will always advance His cause. Where we fit in His glorious plan is determined by how much room we give Him to work and to use our experiences, good and bad, to His glory and to His honor. I understand the perhaps of providence. And again, I'm not trying to be squirmy with the Bible at all. I know you can't put your finger on providence and say, yes, that was providence. Perhaps it was. But I think providence sometimes has a wink. You know, when you wink at someone to let them know it's okay? I have a son in paradise. But I have a son-in-law today who is a gospel preacher, has come from a faithful family. He's the perfect person for my daughter. Coincidence? Maybe. But when January 8th rolls around every year, and I think about my son Jaden's birthday, we also celebrate my son-in-law's birthday. Because it's the same day. That's not like my mother-in-law who chose to die on my birthday. I think she did that on purpose. Providential wink, maybe. But if nothing more than coincidence, it's what I cherish and that helps remind me to trust God to make it better one day, even if I don't see how. In closing, I don't know what your life will present you, but there will be dark days. There will be. But if you're willing to give God room and trust Him to blend your tragedy as He sees fit into His eternal purpose, then faith will help shape you in your time of grief. Thank you.